From 9 to 5, 8 hours of bluegrass music here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Corporate media got you feeling blue. Listen up, we got an answer for you. Starts with a K, it ends with a boo. KBOO, so what you gonna do? We got your music, your news, we speak truth to power. In touch with your community each hour by the hour. 24/7, every day of the year. Since 1968, KBOO has been here. We're all independent, no ads, no corporate bucks. We're not afraid to say that this government sucks. KBOO's your station for freedom of speech. 99%, all for one and one for each. Come on, jump in. This is your station too. Call now. Become a member. You know what to do. It's time to support your station. KBOO 503-232-8818 and watch this movement accelerate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film Malcolm X, playing at the Clinton Street Theater February 21st and the 22nd at 7 p.m. Starring Denzel Washington, this biographical film about Malcolm X by Spike Lee will be playing to honor the 50th anniversary of Malcolm X assassination. That's the film, Malcolm X, playing at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland, on Saturday, February 21st, and Sunday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special for the KBOO Evening News, the Supreme Court has allowed marriage equality to continue in Alabama, a move which advocates say points to a move toward marriage equality across the country.
The Port of Portland remains shut down for the fourth straight day as workers and management remain at an impasse.
We'll get an update from the Oregon legislature, currently in session in Salem, where wage inequity and tax breaks for Amazon are on the agenda. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 9th, 2015. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Rosalind Scott. The Port of Portland's dock workers did not work today as part of a protest against Terminal 6 operator ICTSI. ICTSI suspended all loading and unloading of vessels on Saturday and Sunday, which means that Terminal 6 has been closed for 4 days. 28 other West Coast ports have also suspended activities. The Pacific Maritime Association, an alliance of West Coast port operators, called for this coast-wide halt, claiming that ICTSI and other operators couldn't afford to pay workers when they weren't being sufficiently productive. The Longshore Union told ICTSI that dock workers are protesting because of how officials sent laborers home for 3 days at the end of January and beginning of February. The National Retail Federation reports that if West Coast ports are closed for 10 days, it could cost the country nearly $2.1 billion a day. Despite the growing congestion and cost of closure, ICTSI argues that workers have been intentionally working more slowly for contract negotiating leverage and that employees shouldn't be paid for being unproductive. The Longshore Union contends that the congestion and slowdown of efficiency is to blame on ICTSI's poor management of the supply chain.
Portland's new community panel, created to oversee federally mandated police reforms, will hold its first meeting Monday night. The meeting is open to the public and will start at 6 p.m. at the Midland Library at 805 Southeast 122nd Avenue. Mayor Charlie Hales, who serves as police commissioner, will address the new Community Oversight Advisory Board. The creation of a community board is required as part of the city settlement that stemmed from a 2012 U.S. Justice Department investigation of Portland police use of force. The inquiry found Portland police engaged in a pattern or practice of excessive force against people with mental illness or perceived to have mental illness. The investigation also found that stun gun use by officers was unjustified and excessive at times. There are 15 voting community members who have been selected to serve on the advisory board and 5 non-voting police bureau members. The 15 voting community members are Christy Jameson, Bud Folis, Corey Murphy, Vanessa Gonzalez, and former state senator Abel Gordley.
Well, Ferguson, Missouri is back in the news, this time for allegedly running a modern-day debtor's prison by jailing people with traffic violations for long periods of time because they do not have the money to pay their fines. On Sunday, the Equal Justice Under Law of Washington, the St. Louis nonprofit Arch City Defenders, and St. Louis University School of Law filed 2 lawsuits representing 11 people in Ferguson and 9 people in Jennings, Missouri. The executive director of the Arch City Defenders, Thomas Harvey, said that the traffic courts have generated millions of dollars in fines from defendants and their families, even though the incarcerated people pose no threat to society and are not criminals. The suits seek unspecified damages and also want an injunction from neighboring municipalities to prevent them from also jailing citizens for unpaid fines. The mayor of Ferguson says that the jailings are not motivated by profit and that other allegations that the prisoners are not provided lawyers, medical care, or sanitary conditions are not true. The suits also claim that 4 of the incarcerated citizens who were unable to pay their fines have committed suicide in the past 5 months as a result of being confined for long periods of time in the jails. A spokeswoman for the City of St. Louis said that people fined for traffic violations can reschedule their trials, arrange payment plans, or do community service work instead of paying. Officials from the City of Jennings, Missouri were unavailable for comment.
Several major tech firms are gearing up to build more data centers in rural Oregon if the state legislature agrees to their terms. Representatives from Amazon, Facebook, and Yahoo testified at a committee hearing in Salem to ask for a special tax exception. The issue at hand, a rather obscure tax policy in Oregon known as central assessment. This means that the amount of tax that a company will owe the state of Oregon is based on an assessment of the entire company's assets and an estimate of the Oregon portion of those assets. Amazon already has 4 data centers at the port of Morrow near Boardman, and it says it plans to build at least 6 more, possibly as many as 11. State officials say construction's being held up while the company evaluates the tax situation. Addressing that issue is among lawmakers' top priorities in legislative sessions now underway in Salem. Here's a segment of the recent hearing in Salem at a legislative committee meeting which included representatives of the tech companies, and it begins with a statement from the State Office of Taxation.
Central assessment is a component of the property tax system where we appraise property at the Department of Revenue and have since about 1909. There was an issue back then nationally about appraising, about let's say assessor appraising property of a couple of miles of railroad in their county and then having all of the assessors nationwide doing the same thing and coming up with bizarre values, low values or high values, and so there was a real concern about accuracy and consistency for companies that were operating as a network across the nation or across throughout the world. So this is the genesis of the central assessment concept, was the operating unit and networked. It was easier at that time and better understood to appraise a company on its entire value, its tangible and intangible value, because assessing just a few miles of rail without understanding the importance of how that rail actually makes the network work was understood at that time, and it is today. The legislature subsequently added to transportation, electricity, gas. They added communication, and this is what has really been the most discussed issue in central assessment as of late. And part of that is because communication companies that are centrally assessed tend to have a higher degree of intangible value.
Mr. Chair, members, Greg Chamaw from the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine, appearing today on behalf of Yahoo. My goal today is to explain who we are, why we're here, and how we got here, and what we hope to achieve through the process under which you're going. Let me start with the result. The department does not now centrally assess Yahoo, and we hope that through the changes you make in the communication statutes, that stays that way. Keeping Yahoo from being centrally assessed, as it is not now centrally assessed, has no revenue impact at all. Yahoo is a internet information company. It has a search engine, websites to which you can go to get your news, and if you would like an email account, you can get one of those too. In any of those circumstances, however, you have to have your own internet connection to be able to do that. That is not a service that Yahoo provides. Starting in 2009, the department began centrally assessing Yahoo as a communication company and did so for about 3 years. And then the department adopted a rule and stopped centrally assessing Yahoo. After the Comcast decision, the department was proposing a rule that would continue to not centrally assess Yahoo, and we would like very much to have that be the permanent state of affairs. Yahoo in Oregon has an office building. It's in Hillsboro. People who work there do office-like activities, including helping law enforcement root out internet crime. The building is locally assessed by the Washington County Assessor as an office building, and we would like very much to keep it that way. Thank you.
According to the Oregonian newspaper,
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, I urge you to fulfill the promise of pay equity.
According to the Oregonian newspaper, data centers are the second largest segment of Oregon's tech industry in terms of capital investment, trailing only the state's huge semiconductor industry. But they're not a major employer. Even a large facility may need only a few dozen employees. Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google have all been drawn to Oregon by a favorable tax climate. The state has no sales tax on the expensive computers that run server farms, and it exempts data centers in enterprise zones from the property taxes that other businesses pay. That can save a large data center tens of millions of dollars annually. But uncertainty over central assessment could undermine that attraction, according to industry representatives. Representatives from the phone and cable TV industries argue that they want central assessment repealed entirely.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Bob and Bill to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Okay, so I'm Bill, and Bob is here to my left. I'm not sure about his politics, but you know, geographically speaking. And we are here to tell you all the great things that make you just desire to support KBOO, one of which is our news program. And also, we want to tell you how to get a hold of us.
You know, Bill, I wish I could say that our volunteers are standing by for your phone call. However, this part of Southeast 8th, the phones are down, so you cannot call in. There are two ways to reach us at this moment. One is by going to the internet at kboo.fm. It's real easy to make a donation that way, or by stopping in at our station here. Our volunteers would love to meet you and take your money.
And that's at 20 Southeast 8th, by the way. That's right. just south of Burnside. And I also wanted to mention that without you, without our members, none of this gets done. And we will talk to you, not at length, but at a larger length than the time of our first break here, about some of the great things, not only that our news has done, but the way we approach the news, which is very different from mainstream media. Meanwhile, kboo.fm is the place to go to donate, or once again, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, walk right in the door, come on back to where someone can sit with you and collect your money and maybe even choose a thank you gift.
If you like our news shows, if you like Democracy Now! And the kinds of programming we provide, whether it's the news or whether it's music, such an eclectic group of programs that we have here, we hope that you'll join us by becoming a member of KBOO Community Radio. We really appreciate our membership, and you can, as I said, write this number down. We don't have a phone right now, but you can call later, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO, or online at KBOO-FM.
One of the bills that is being considered in the Oregon State Legislature this term is a bill to address the wage gap between women and men in the state. HB 2006 would outlaw employers from paying men and women different amounts for equivalent work. Another bill, House Bill 2007, would prohibit employers from punishing workers who discuss their wages. Currently in Oregon, women earn an average of 79 cents for every dollar earned by their male counterparts. Senator Dianne Rosenbaum introduced the bill, and here's a clip of her speaking this morning at the hearing of the Committee on Business and Labor.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, I urge you to fulfill the promise of pay equity in Oregon by voting in support of House Bills 2006 and 2007. Oregon's working women, their families, and our communities deserve a fair shot at a fair wage, and we must act now. I began my working career almost 40 years ago, and I recognize that we have made significant progress in that time toward equal pay. But there is still work to do. That is why I'm a proud chief sponsor of House Bills 2006 and 2007. I look forward to working with you this session to promote policies that work for working women, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions of the senator? Rep. Sam Wagner.
Senator, just kind of going through it and everything and looking at some of the laws that we have in place, that this appears to kind of change things a little bit, but I'm just wondering what made you bring this bill forward? Do you feel that business owners in the state are basically discriminating against women and look at women lesser than their men counterparts in the workplace, or what made you bring this bill?
Well, I certainly wouldn't say that, and I think that most employers, the vast majority of employers, want to do the right thing by their employees. But if you look at the statistics that I talked about earlier and this persistent wage gap of 79 cents on the dollar, it's hard to argue that our current laws are adequately addressing that, or we wouldn't have such a large gap. So it's really that, just the simple facts of it, that caused us to introduce these bills.
How come other minorities were not included in this, and it was just women that were singled out? Because the Hispanic community, I think we've seen, was like 73 cents that they were paid on the dollar, and some different things, different testimony that we've had, different sessions here and everything. why did you single out one group and not include everybody in this?
Well, this is the problem that we are here to address this morning. There certainly are other proposals which I would support. As I said in my testimony, the gap is even greater for other groups, and that is a problem as well. But these bills are about pay equity for the women of Oregon.
Representative Bonetto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kenemer, or Representative Kenemer, I wanted to follow up on something he said, I think, and that was that if they're not enforced right now, what makes you think that they, under this bill here, that they would be enforced?
Well, I think for one thing, Mr. Chair and Representative Barreto, as I said in answer to the previous question, people may be afraid to invoke the rights that they currently have under the law because of fear that they're going to be retaliated against or even lose a job because they do so. So the second of these two bills, House Bill 2007, simply says that you have the right to file a complaint under existing law or under the other companion bill, and you can't be retaliated against, you can't lose your job, you can't be demoted, you can't be have your pay reduced because you simply invoke the rights that you have under law.
That was an excerpt from this morning's hearing in Salem on a bill to address the gender-based wage gap in Oregon. Senator Dianne Rosenbaum answered questions posed by Oregon State representatives. The state passed the Equal Rights Amendment last November, which prohibits discrimination based on gender. The two bills in question would lay out the consequences for employers who continue to discriminate based on gender. Analysis by the State Employment Department found that women earned less, on average, than men in all of the state's major industries in 2012. Some of the widest gaps were in arts and entertainment, finance and healthcare, and social assistance. Even though the healthcare industry tends to be relatively high-paying, women's average monthly pay came to just 58% of men's.
A strange, chalky rain has been falling in eastern Oregon and Washington the last few days. The rain has left the ground covered with a gray, chalky substance, and cars and buildings appear to be covered in ash. The National Weather Service was called in to investigate the cause of the rain and to determine if the substance it contained was dangerous. The federal meteorologists have several theories on the cause. Right now, the leading theory is that the rain contains dust particles from Nevada. Last Thursday, a major storm hit the Nevada desert. High winds had whipped across Northwest Nevada on Thursday night, downing power lines, causing traffic accidents, and clouding the air with thick, chalky dust similar in shade to the stuff that fell in the Northwest beginning a day later. The incidents coincided with a 15-hour period of south winds averaging 46 miles per hour in the eastern half of Oregon and Washington. That wind was strong enough to carry dust hundreds of miles northward. Traveling at an average of 40 miles per hour, it would have taken the dust cloud about 12 hours to reach Spokane. The first chalky rain reports began to come in at just about that time on Friday. Meteorologists can't be 100% sure that their theory is correct without conducting mineral tests, but are fairly confident that the source of the chalky rain is the Nevada dust storm. Since then, the rain pouring down across the Northwest hasn't let up, but the droplets in eastern Oregon and Washington are coming down clear again.
You're listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news, so now it's your turn. Joining us now are Bob and Bill to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you, and I am Bill. And the way to do it right now is by going to kboo.fm on the internet and clicking at the top right where it says donate. And then from there, you will see all the ways that you can do that. Normally, we would ask you to call 877-500-5266, but the neighborhood phones are down at the moment. They are working on it right outside, I've been told, so this is encouraging. But I wanted to talk about our news. You heard the report from the legislature, you know, actual people in the legislature stating, you know, their views and about bills, etc. We are the only newscast that provides a weekly report on Portland City Council meetings. Interestingly enough, I was at the City Council meeting last week about the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and there was no reporting on that in the Oregonian at all. I was impressed. But you would hear that on KABU. We also have regular reports on the Beaverton, Hillsborough, Clackamas County, and metro regional governments. So when we say community radio, we mean it. KBOO.FM is the place to donate now, or come right in to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue with your bag of bucks and join us, or up your donation a little bit. So you are the community. We all work together.
And you know, we know that there are so many organizations asking you to contribute, asking for your money, including public broadcasting. We hope you'll agree that KBOO is unique in how we operate and the type of programming that we provide, such as real, honest local news like you're hearing right now. We hope that you value KBOO enough to become a member if you haven't already. At any level, $5 a month will get you not only to become part of a family, the KBOO family, but it might get you some gifts like wonderful books, tickets to shows, no matter what your choice in music, we have tickets to give away. Or I mentioned 15 minutes ago or so that we have a sweepstakes going on, where if you become a member, you can win $300 in gift certificates to Portland Saturday Market.
And actually, you don't have to donate.
No, that's
true.
That's
the sweepstakes part of it. So you can just contact us and give us your information, and you may be a big winner.
So it's just a little extra push to get you to become a member or up your donation. I know Bill and I are both members. I've been a member for, I guess, about 5 years. I've been in Portland 8 years. How about you?
Well, I've been a member on and off since I first came here in 1971, before many of you were even a gleam in your grandfather's eye, as my parents would say. So, yes, and I donate, I think, $15 a month.
Good for you.
Because KABU is easily worth that.
Oh, very, very easily. It's a great station, and we hope you'll drop by 20 Southeast 8th, just off Burnside, and check us out and come with a check.
Yes, indeed. Or go to kboo.fm on the internets and click on Donate Now at the top right corner and donate. Yeah. And you can also find some of these gifts online.
Oh, good. And as Bill said, they're working on our phones right now. Hopefully they'll be up soon. So if you're not on the internet right now, write this number down. Not if you're in a car, please. Write this number down, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO.
And remember that those first two OOs, those are zeros. The second two OOs, those are the letters. Okay, and we are going to be going back to our local unique news very soon. Just one more thing. Let's say it again. KBOO.FM.
About 8,000 Californians took to the streets of Oakland on Saturday, calling on Governor Jerry Brown to follow the lead of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and issue a statewide ban on fracking. Fracking, or hydraulic fracturing, is an oil and gas extraction process in which water and chemicals are injected into the ground at high pressure. Activists and environmentalists say fracking contributes to climate change, pollutes communities, and waste a massive amount of water, a particular concern for a state in the midst of a historic drought. Though Governor Brown has embraced some environmental issues while in office, participants in Saturday's march insist that a real climate leader would not support fracking. FSRN's Andrew Klein reports.
The thousands of people who turned out for the March for Real Climate Leadership in Oakland were in a festive mood as they called for a statewide fracking ban. Voters in two California counties, San Benito and Santa Cruz, passed their own local bans during last year's elections. The bans passed despite heavy spending by the oil and gas industry, which portrays fracking as a key to energy independence.
The oil industry has tremendous power in California.
That's Dan Bacher, a Sacramento-based investigative journalist focusing on environmental politics.
Most people don't know that it's the most powerful corporate lobby in the state.
Much of the oil lobby spending last year helped defeat a fracking moratorium bill in the state legislature. That legislation would have replaced Senate Bill 4, which Governor Brown signed into law in 2013 after taking nearly $2.5 million from the oil lobby. Activists and scientists alike have criticized the 2013 bill for codifying weak fracking regulations. Andrew Grinberg of Clean Water Action says the Brown administration has failed to rein in an industry that uses millions of gallons of water each day.
Across the state, people are suffering from the worst drought we've ever seen here in California. And when you're running out of your most precious resource, it's a good idea to start saving it and protecting it. We need real water leadership in California, and real water leaders don't frack.
While fracking creates competition for scarce water supplies, there are also other environmental concerns. Adam Scow is the California director of Food and Water Watch.
The more oil we extract through fracking, the more we burn, the worse global warming, and the more global warming-induced droughts we're going to have, like the one scientists are saying we're having now. So the solution is to ban fracking and transition away from fossil fuels.
That transition is already happening under Governor Brown, who vowed in his inaugural address this year to place California on the path to 50% renewable energy by 2030. But participants in the march say this benchmark is too modest and want Brown to ban fracking now. But so far, that hasn't happened. Instead, under Brown's leadership, fracking is spreading, especially in the Central Valley.
Communities in the Central Valley have long been impacted by a whole bunch of different environmental issues. Pesticides, poorest air quality in the nation, and now fracking.
That's Juan Flores, a community organizer with the Center on Race, Poverty, and the Environment, who lives in Kern County, the county with the most fracked wells in the state.
We're here walking and marching and protesting in the hope that Governor Brown, as Governor Cuomo, believes that fracking must be banned.
Whether Governor Brown will heed this call and follow the statewide example of New York Governor Cuomo remains to be seen. But in the meantime, activists will continue to fight on the local level. The next battle comes March 3rd, when residents of La Habra Heights will vote on a fracking ban in their town. From Oakland, I'm Andrew Klein, FSRN.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a new member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm. Normally, we also allow you to call up at 877-500-5266, but due to bad weather, the neighborhood phone lines are currently out of order. Hopefully, they'll be repaired soon. In the meantime, stay tuned for Labor Radio at 6. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather in the Portland area is rainy with a high of 55. There's a 40% chance of rain. Today in history, on February 9th, 1825, after no candidate receives a majority of electoral votes in the U.S. presidential election of 1824, the United States House of Representatives elected John Quincy Adams as President of the United States. The quote of the day is from John Quincy Adams, the sixth President of the United States, who said, "If your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader." Thank you.
It's 5:33. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
How about that Super Bowl game, huh? And today, I've got the final score for you. The Pats 28, Seahawks 24, and Glendale minus $2 million. $2 million, that is. The amount that Mayor Jerry Weirs estimates that Glendale, Arizona lost by having the, quote, honor of hosting Super Bowl XLIX. Lost? Isn't this sports spectacular a magic money machine? That's what the NFL's super slick billionaire owners say as they hustle their big game from city to city, claiming that the lucky host will gain $500 million in added hotel rentals, sales taxes, etc. Independent analysts, however, show that additional spending in a host city actually is far less than super, ranging from about $200 million to as low as $30 million. Moreover, much of that just replaces revenue from regular tourists. And, in Glendale's case, hordes of fans coming to the game chose to stay, eat, and party in Phoenix, so the money went there. And don't forget to subtract a city's added costs, such as thousands of police overtime hours and extra cleanup crews. And while Glendale did have its moment in the global TV spotlight, Mayor Weir is not exactly bullish on any real benefit coming from that. In the long run, he says, down the road, certainly we might break even on this. Meanwhile, the people of Glendale are still paying a heavy price for earlier failed gambles on big-time sports. To stave off bankruptcy, the city has cut workers, street maintenance, library hours, and taxes had to be raised. This is Jim Hightower saying, so look out, San Francisco, Houston, Minneapolis, and other cities next in line to host Super Bowls. One clue into who really wins in these hyped-up deals is that the NFL didn't even offer a ticket to Mayor Weirs. He had to watch the game on his TV at home.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled this morning to deny a stay on a lower court's ruling that deemed unconstitutional Alabama's ban on same-sex marriage. The ruling paved the way for Alabama to start issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples in the state. Only Justices Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia dissented from the denial of the stay. In a letter sent yesterday, the Chief Justice of Alabama Supreme Court, Roy Moore, had told state probate judges that they should not issue licenses, but the U.S. Supreme Court ruling clarified that the ban on same-sex marriages was unconstitutional. For more information, I spoke with Amy Hirschfeld, Movement Building Director for Basic Rights Oregon. Can you walk us through the series of events that led to today's Supreme Court ruling?
Sure. So the truth is, I am not as familiar with all the details and would probably want to, you know, consult the twists and turns, but I know that, as is the case for many states who've won the freedom to marry, there were a series of court decisions and appeals, and that from what I understand, the state of Alabama didn't welcome the federal ruling as enthusiastically as other states have, including Oregon. So they've had a pretty long and circuitous path to today through a number of court rulings and appeals.
Same-sex marriage is allowed in the state as of today. That's correct?
That's right. Yeah, we're really excited for LGBT couples and families in Alabama who won the freedom to marry today. We're also disappointed, of course, that several Alabama counties have chosen not to issue marriage licenses to loving, committed same-sex couples. They're doing that in defiance of the federal ruling. So our thoughts and best wishes are with all the couples in Alabama for whom today was a really historic and thrilling day. And we're especially holding in our hearts the couples who've waited decades to be able to have the freedom to marry today, and in some cases were denied at their local county clerks.
We have one probate judge there, Wes Allen, has vowed to stop issuing marriage licenses in his county. Is that legal? Can individual probate judges in Alabama refuse to issue these licenses in their own specific counties?
Well, I'm certainly not an attorney. I know that in other states that have won the freedom to marry, there have been some inconsistencies in the application of licenses across counties. But we're cautiously optimistic that it won't take long for all of the counties to recognize the law of the land and start recognizing all loving and committed couples.
It seems like Alabama, more than any other state, tried to oppose what has become law in other states and seems to be inevitable across the country.
Yeah, that's my understanding, too. You know, we were really lucky in Oregon to have a clearer path to victory since our governor and state leaders supported overturning the ban. But as you said, that's not been the case in other states. In fact, our state just to the east, Idaho, has had some similar challenges to Alabama with a number of appeals before the ruling could stand.
Given that the state Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore there is still on record as opposing same-sex marriage, and then as you mentioned, we have individual probate judges there who are not issuing marriage licenses. What recourse does the state of Alabama have in opposing the U.S. Supreme Court ruling? It seems that they tried to ban same-sex marriages. That's been overturned, and yet there's still certain counties, at least, are refusing to issue marriage licenses.
Yeah, I mean, we know that that some state leaders, you know, may pull out all the stops, but this is, as you've shared, an eventuality, right? The majority of Americans support the freedom to marry for all loving and committed couples. We know that this will be taken up by the Supreme Court this year, and we're cautiously optimistic about that outcome. And today's an exciting day for families and Alabama, and you know, we feel like regardless of zip code or state, everybody should have the freedom to marry the person they love, and having more states with the freedom to marry is good for all families because folks need the peace of mind and protections when they cross state lines.
The Supreme Court will be ruling on the legality of same-sex marriages across the entire nation. Now, today, only two Supreme Court justices dissented from the denial of the stay against same-sex marriages in Alabama, Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia. What does this bode for the decision that should be coming up in the next few months?
Sure. Well, you know, we don't know what the courts will do. We don't have a crystal ball, but Alabama today became the 37th state to have the freedom to marry. So we certainly see a movement and a trend in this country in just a short period of time. It's very, very hopeful. So again, we're excited for couples and families in Alabama and for other states to come. And we feel really confident that soon all couples will have the freedom to marry. And that's what we're working hard to achieve.
We've been talking with Amy Hirschfeld, Movement Building Director of Basic Rights Oregon, about today's Supreme Court decision to deny a stay on the ban on same-sex marriages in Alabama. This is Ken Jones with KBOO News.
Hey, y'all. Now's your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us now are Bob and Bill to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you. This is Bill. We are doing our winter membership drive, and this is your opportunity to go to kboo.fm on your internet connection and click the Donate Now button at the top right and donate. Normally, we would be telling you, and you might write this down if you're not driving, to call 877-500-5266. And you can't call because the phones in our neighborhood are down. Though apparently there's somebody out front, or maybe several somebodies, working on getting them to function. So this is a good thing. Listening to the news, I was reminded that judge in Alabama reminded me of George Wallace, who was standing in the schoolhouse door. Well, that judge is standing in the courthouse door, and I think he will be no more successful than Wallace. Meanwhile, we have our own local news. I wanted to share with you some of the stories that were broken here by KBOO News. Farm workers in Washington County face the shutdown of the only remaining low-income health clinics in the county. The Koch brothers' industries ended up coming to a small logging town on the Olympic Peninsula, and no one but KBOO News noticed it. Well, and so, you know, this is just some of what you get from KBOO. We also, if you happen to be in the neighborhood or want to travel around in the wind and rain, you can come over to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue with your checkbook in hand or your credit card or your debit card or just a bucket of bucks and share with us and get to meet people, the volunteers and some of the staff that are here. We would love to meet you, and we would love to see you come in and contribute.
You know, Bill, media consolidation is at an all-time high. What does that mean? That means that news such as you're getting right now, local news, true local news, is increasingly rare. So we hope that you'll agree. You hope that you appreciate what we're doing here by going to kboo.fm or writing this number down, again, as Bill said, if you're not driving, 877-500-5266. And pretty soon, we hope, our phones will be back. Darn this weather. It's causing a little bit of a problem with our winter membership drive. But please do become a member of KBOO. We have over 5,000 members, and we hope, if you're not already one of them, that you will be soon. Thanks.
Tensions between the European Union and the new Greek government continue to increase ahead of an emergency meeting this week to discuss new bailout terms for Greece. The current bailout funding agreements for Greece expire at the end of February, and Greece has announced that they will need a new bailout or they will default on their EU loans. The new Greek government, elected on an anti-austerity platform, has demanded that any new bailouts not have austerity measures that have impoverished the Greek citizenry. The EU and the German government have stated that there was no way out of the bailout terms and austerity policies agreed to by the previous Greek government. The Greek Prime Minister and Finance Minister both